Hi. My name is Michelle, and I am a very grateful Alakine. I don't know about bubbling. I've just been told I talk a lot. So, bubbling, talk a lot, what have you. This is the first speaker's meeting that I've ever been to where they actually had a podium that was short enough for me where I didn't have to stand in a crate or a brick or somebody's back. So, I'm glad that I'm not standing on anything I could fall off of today because I'm really kind of tired. I've had enough coffee to make a locomotive go from here to Los Angeles. I'm trying to think how I want to start out with y'all today. I wasn't always bubbly and I didn't always love life. I am a member of a family with a long line of alcoholics. There are tons of alcoholics in my family. I love everyone. They're a lot of fun. They're more fun sober. But that's where I have come from. And the first alcoholic experience that I've lived through is my father. And that's where I'll start, because that's what I was born into. I was born in Florida to Rita and Don, very proud parents who didn't know what they were getting themselves into when they had me. And from the first day, I guess my house was just weird. And I didn't know what was wrong, but I knew that something was really wrong with my house and with my family. My dad, I didn't see him very much, and when I saw him, he was asleep on the sofa. In a very deep sleep that some of you like to refer to as a drunken stupor, but to me, he was asleep. And I stayed with my mom a lot, and she took care of me, and my brother, who was 10 years older than me, took care of me. And they were my very best friends. I would like to tell you that I do not relate well to people. I'm learning to relate well to people my own age. I have never, to use the teenager expression, hung out with people my own age. When I was little, I stayed with my mom and I stayed with my brother, and they're older than I am, and I learned to rely on adults. They became my friends. They took care of me. They were my support, and people my own age were very cruel because they were children, and children naturally are cruel. Sometimes, you know, they make fun, call you names, the Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer syndrome. But I don't relate well to people my own age. It is something that I have learned to do. And that is because when my father was drinking, I would stay with my mom. She would take care of me. She would take me places. She would take me out late at night to get away from the house, and we would go to a Waffle House, and she would drink coffee, and I would drink a Coke. Today we go to the Waffle House where Jenny's late at night and we drink coffee. Both of us do, or sometimes I have a Coke, but it's not because my father is drinking and we have to get out of the house. It's because we actually can enjoy one another's company without having the fear of going back home and wondering what we are going to face. I do not remember much of my father's drinking, and that is a very frightening thing for me to tell you. It used to not bother me that I can't remember a lot of what happened. I will tell you what I remember, but it really frightens me because I don't know if that means I've gotten over it or if it means I haven't dealt with it yet, because I know I still have a lot to deal with as far as resentments and pain and learning about what it is to be a parent, what it is to be a child. I have a lot of that still left to learn. I remember the unhappy things of my childhood. I don't remember very many happy things. I was a scared little kid. Everything was a crisis for me, even as a child. When I was 5, I was in the hospital and I almost died. That was a crisis for them. I kind of enjoyed it because I was asleep most of the time, and I didn't have to be around or listen to people yelling and screaming. Incidents I remember from my dad's drinking are that I had to go through. I used to sit on the steps in our apartment in Atlanta inside our townhouse, and I listened to my parents fight. And my brother would come and get me, and he would take me upstairs and take me to his room, and he would take care of me. We'd listen to records. He talked to me. We played together. He was my best friend. And today, he's still one of my best friends. I remember not staying at home a lot at night. I remember staying at other people's places at night. I remember putting chairs underneath the doorknobs so Dad couldn't get in. I remember fights in the car on the way home from out-of-town trips, and I remember running away a lot. And today I can't run away anymore. Today I have to stay and face everything. Because it's not going to go away if I run away from it anymore. And it never went away even when we did leave. It was still always there, and we always had to come back. And when we came back, it was worse because we didn't know how to deal with it. When I was 8 years old, my father, I thought, went out of town. My mom says, I know, that he was in a treatment facility. I thought he was out of town. He was always out of town, and it was great. We looked forward to those days he was out of town. Because we could stay in our own house and we could have fun together. And when he came back home, it was kind of like settling into that routine of, well, what are we going to do now? We used to hang out at the liquor store and talk to the cops about my dad and send them over to go pick him up. Just not things that most little kids do. But when I was 8, he left and went to a treatment facility called Peachford Hospital. I went, and I thought he was living the high life. I have always loved staying in hotels. I love to travel. And he was staying in a room with a roommate who he seemed to be having a lot of fun with. He had a pool. He had meals served to him in a cafeteria. He didn't have to cook. And he had lots of friends around, and he could do a lot of stuff. And I thought, this is Club Med at 8 years old. This is where I wanted to be when I grew up. So I vowed right then I was going to become an alcoholic so I could go to Peachford Hospital and live in a resort. Since then, I've changed my mind, much to my parents' happiness and enjoyment. I'm not headed right now to become an alcoholic. Hopefully, I will stay that way and keep my head on straight, but we'll see. Dad got out of the hospital, and I thought, well, this is great. He's not going to be drinking anymore. And he didn't drink anymore. But suddenly, I didn't have my mom around anymore. She was at meetings. And Dad was at meetings, and I was at the babysitter's house. And I cannot express to you, as an 8-year-old, how much resentment I had that my parents were no longer there. I remember telling my mom once that I really missed having them around and that I was tired of them going to meetings. And she looked at me and she said, would you rather your father be drunk? Well, that was a stupid question. Of course I didn't want him to be drunk. I just wanted my parents back home. But they went on going to meetings, and I started going to Alateen at the age of 8. And I went to meetings with people who were 16, 15, 17 years old. And I started learning what alcoholism had done to me. When I first came into the program, and most of my story today is going to be like what my life is like after I got in the program, because that's what I can remember. And that's how I've lived most of my life, is within the walls of the three fellowships. When I first walked into an Alateen meeting, I walked in with people who were older than me. And I listened to what they said. And I tried to stay really quiet when I first got there because I was very insecure, and I'm still very insecure today. We went to dinner last night, all the speakers ate dinner, and together with the committee members, and I'm very talkative. I'll talk to a brick if it'll just sit there and listen to me. I talk to myself. I know that sounds weird, but you know, if I do something wrong, I'll just kind of talk to myself a little bit. When I play softball and I'm pitching or whatever and I make something go really wrong, like I hit a player, walk 3 people in a row, I'll sit there and I'll talk to myself. Well, around people I don't know, I don't want to say something foolish, so I don't talk. I listen, and I have a really nervous laugh I use a lot as a defense mechanism. I hate that phrase, but it is true. I laugh a lot to cover up my insecurity. And it's very hard for me to sit with people I don't know and feel like I can actually stay with them. It's not secure for me, and I have to have that security because for so long I didn't. Everything in my life is unpredictable. So I went to this first Alateen meeting, and I was really scared. And I don't know what it was like at your first meeting. I'm sure maybe some of you were scared too. But I was 8 years old in a world where people were twice my age. But they welcomed me. And other LT meetings I've been to, they don't like little kids to come, and I can understand that. When I got older, I didn't want them there either. You know, it's my meeting. They need their own meeting. But I'm glad they welcomed me. And for a couple of years, I have stuck with meetings ever since I've been to them, but for a couple of years, I learned how to walk the walk and talk the talk on the outside. And on the inside, I was still really scared and really insecure. And my brother went off to college. That was probably the meanest thing he ever did to me, was he left me and went to the University of Georgia. And I cried. He had taken care of me. He had been my playmate. He had been my friend when no one else was my friend, and he was gone. But I thought, you know, he's got to do this. That's fine. And when he came home and we went to visit him, he was acting he would act stranger and stranger every time I saw him or we went to see him. And I got to thinking, well, maybe he's doing drugs or drinking. And I thought, no, he knows what this program teaches us, and he's been in the program for a while. He knows not to drink and do drugs. 2 years after I got in the program, my brother went into treatment at Peachford Hospital, that same Club Med resort that my father entered. And unlike my dad, when I went to visit Mike, he was not thrilled to see me. He didn't want to talk to me. He didn't want to talk to my parents. And I was really, really crushed. I had lost my best friend, and I really had no friends. I set people off. I was always talking badly about myself, and people at school just didn't want to be around me a lot. I put all my work into my studies. I'm still an overachiever in school. It is still one of the only things that I see myself as good at, is studying and working. I still have a little problem with social relationships outside the program, and I still have trouble making friends, and I had lost one of the best friends I had ever had. I thought he would never talk to me again. I thought he never wanted to be near us again. And that's when I really had to start using the program. See, going to meetings doesn't make you better. If you just go and sit in a meeting, it's not going to make you better. If you go sit in a hospital and you're sick, it won't make you better. You have to use what you get in those places. You have to use the treatments you get at a hospital if you're physically sick. And likewise with meetings, I had to learn to use the things that they gave me, the tools of acceptance and the tools of letting go, and really start building some faith, because I had no faith. When I was little, I used to bargain with God every night. I said, God, just make my dad better. I'll promise I'll be the greatest little kid you've ever put on this earth. And it didn't get any better, so I thought that God had deserted me. But God put some really special people into my Allison meeting where I was who led me and, you know, sat me down and said, Michelle, you're going to have to use what you've learned. You can't just sit here and come and expect for things to get better. It's not going to work. So I started trying to practice the tools of detachment and letting go and acceptance. And it is very hard. This is a very simple program, but sometimes it's very hard to practice when people you know and love are involved. It's easy to tell someone, let go and let God. Don't you want to just slap people when they say that to you sometimes? Don't you supposed to say, do you know what they're doing? Do you know what they're doing? I can just fix them. It'll be all better. Well, fortunately, God did not put me to fix everything on this earth, because it would be a pretty messed up place, more so than it is now. I started trying to use the tools I've learned in this program, and I started to get a little bit better. After about 4 or 5 years in the program, about 4 years, the age of 12, that mature age, seasoned age of 12, I started going through more problems personally. Just because the alcohol is gone, all of us know that it doesn't make it automatically better. They're still fighting, they're still nitpicking, backbiting, there's still resentment. There's still all those things that we had before that we just didn't know what they were. And I went into a really deep depression that I talked to a couple people about, but I didn't talk to the people I needed to talk to. And the people I thought I needed to talk to thought it was a passing thing. And it wasn't. I had really low self-esteem. I had, up until about the age of 6 or 7, I was a thin kid, okay? I was little. I was, you know, this cute little girl as you see walking down the street holding their parents' hands. Around the age of 7, I discovered the new concept of food and really liked it a lot. And I ate a lot. And I wasn't fat. I was just kind of pudgy. And I'm as happy as Lebanese. My mom is really thin, okay? She's a size 6. It's disgusting. I'm really proud of her. I wish I could be a size 6. But my part of me born into, and part of it is my eating habits. I'm a big kid. Not fat, just on the stocky side. I look like a softball player, and I was. But appearance meant a lot to me. It still means a lot to me. It's not number one in my life anymore. I had a roommate last year, first semester at school where I go to, and she spent 2 hours working on her face. I thought, honey, you gotta spend 2 hours on try something else, you know. Can't do this for the rest of your life. It's not gonna work. But appearance meant a lot to me. And I remember in the fifth grade, I always wanted to wear Jordache jeans and Nike shoes and Izod shirt. And I never had any of those things. So I felt less than. And when I was in the seventh grade, when I was about 12, I was still kind of on the overweight side. And about that time, people are starting to pair up, you know, have those cute little relationships. Young love, or young love, whatever you prefer to call it. I didn't have that, and I felt real left out. And I knew it was because of the way I looked. Because, see, I was an ugly child. And I felt ugly. I told myself I was ugly. And I wouldn't stop talking to you until you said, and I'd say, you know, I really need to do something with my appearance. I'm just so ugly. And people say, no, you're not. And I wouldn't stop until they made some negative comment to justify my feeling that I was ugly, to make me realize that I really needed to work on myself. I got really depressed because my outward appearance didn't change. And things were going wrong in my house. My parents and I weren't getting along very well. I didn't think anyone was listening to me. I felt very alone. My parents were still fighting. And I thought the way to get back at every one of you for everything you have ever done to me or ever thought about doing to me, and to get out of the depression I was in, to just kill myself. It's a really novel concept. And it worked. Well, there are a couple problems with suicide is, besides it being just a general cop-out, I can't enjoy you weeping over me. I can't enjoy not being here. I can't enjoy seeing you hurt for me. And I wanted to see you hurt for me. I wanted you to feel bad for what I had gone through. Because, see, in some little way, it was your fault. And I wanted you to hurt the way I hurt inside. I wanted you to know how I felt. Because you didn't know how I felt, and if you didn't know, you didn't care. And I wanted you to care, and I wanted you to feel really bad. And I wanted someone to really miss me. I went downstairs while my parents were gone, and I took out a carving knife. We have really fun knives. It's like, one doesn't work every year on birds that we get for special occasions, so, you know, we try 6 or 7 before we get the thing cut up. And we have lots of really big knives. And I took out one and I held it to my chest. And I said, this is it. I'm going to make everyone feel really bad for what they've done to me. Y'all, I'm the biggest coward that God ever put on this earth. I couldn't do it. I just thought, this might hurt. This might hurt a little bit. But I thought to myself, you know, not every day is really bad. There are some good things about some of the days I've gone through. Some days are really sunny and the pollen doesn't bother my allergies. Some days my parents and I get along, and some days they don't fight. And some days I do get along with my friends. But boy, those times that are really bad are really bad, and I think they outweigh those good times. But I'm going to give tomorrow another chance. And I'm going to see if tomorrow doesn't get better. I can always come back to this kitchen tomorrow. It'll still be here tomorrow. Tomorrow got a lot better. It really did. I stayed in Alateen for a long time because it really helped me. And I met a lot of really neat friends in this program that have gotten me through some awfully rough times. I have a lot of friends who I went to Alateen with who are now in the other programs. I haven't had that chance yet. Hopefully I won't take that chance because there's no guarantee if I start drinking that I'll find the program of AA, even though it's in my own backyard, as Dorothy would say. I think some parents have this misconception. If they send their children to Alateen, they will have wonderful, beautiful Stepford children where everything is okay and they have the tools of the program. And even if they're going through a rough time, it'll be all right. And that they won't start drinking or they won't disobey, because they'll learn in the program how to use the tools and how to live a better life. How many of you adults in the program go through life and everything is fine and you get along with everybody, and even when you don't, it's always okay? I didn't think so. See, something that really gets me in the meeting is when I'm really going through a rough time, and I still have my rough days. It really scares me when I come across people in the program who've been in for a while who don't ever go through anything bad anymore. Nothing is wrong anymore. Lives are great. And even if they're not, easy does it. Those slogans are great, and they have gotten through a lot. But sometimes I need to cry, and sometimes I need to talk to people. And I don't need someone to tell me when they want to get on with the meeting, and I'm really hurting inside. I don't need them to tell me. Just keep coming back, honey. It'll get better. Because it does, and I need to talk to you. And if someone, if a newcomer is in your meeting, and you just don't want to take the time, because there are so many other seasoned people in your meetings that you know have wonderful things to say, please think before you say, honey, keep coming back. It'll get better. Because sometimes that person really needs to talk. And you can let them talk for a while and just say, you know, I know what you're going through. And I think we might could work this out after the meeting, instead of saying, well, easy does it, like going like God. Because that's just like passing them up like they've been passed up time and time again, and saying everything's going to be okay and not really having anything to assure them that it's going to be okay. I had wonderful people who listened to me during meetings and after meetings. And I had people who had the guts to tell me to shut up when I needed to hear it. Because sometimes I do need to be quiet and I do need to listen. And not only to people in the meeting, but to God. Because sometimes I get so busy and so wrapped up in what I'm doing that I forget He's there for me and He's watching over me. And sometimes I think I make God pull his hair out, if he has hair. Sure he does. Unless he has baldness, which, you know, is another story. But I really think that sometimes I frustrate God. But I think a lot of times I make him laugh. Because he sits and he says, why don't you just let me have it? I'm bigger than you. I am only 5'1", y'all. I can only bench press 60 pounds, and that's on a good day. So what makes me think that I can fix your problems and my problems and the world's problems? I can't do it. I made a B in logic, y'all. I can't fix your problems. But I had people who listened to me and told me to be quiet when I needed to. And that's what got me a little bit better day by day. My friends that are on the other side of the program, I think it's great. And I'm glad they found it. Because my brother went through the same thing. He went to meetings and went to meetings, and he gave some really good meetings. She was stoned when he gave them. But he gave really good beatings. But this program doesn't guarantee that I'm not going to screw up. And it's not going to guarantee me that every day is going to be a bowl of sunshine or a rose garden. It just gives me the tools to know that whatever happens to me, I know I'm going to be okay. A couple years ago, I kind of got out of my LT meetings because I've gotten older. And I'm in that transition phase that a lot of young people go through who decide to stay in the program and they decide to switch to Al-Anon. Now I go to Al-Anon meetings. And I think it's really neat that adults go through the same things that I went through and that they hurt the way I hurt. I think it's really neat we can share with each other because for a long time I didn't trust adults. Even though they were the only things I had, I didn't trust adults outside my family because, see, my father had hurt me. And he was supposed to be my dad. And if your own father hurts you, how can you trust adults when that happens? It takes a long time. And my brother was an adult, and he hurt me. And my friends hurt me. I really couldn't trust anybody. And so there's kind of that thing sitting in the back of my head saying, do I really want to go to meetings with these people, or are they just going to be like my parents and tell me the same things that my parents tell me when they're being parents? Well, honey, just obey your parents and it'll be fine. But we've come to really love each other. I go to some really great Al-Anon meetings, and I've met a lot of people in the program there that I really cherish. I've met a lot of people in the AA program that I really come to love. See, I got into this program at the age of 8, so I've met a lot of people. I've known Jerry ever since I was about 4 inches shorter than I am now, which is how tall I was when I was 8. I haven't gotten a lot bigger, y'all. Not much has changed. I've known Jerry since I came in here. I've known so many good AA people. Lester is sitting in the third row over here, and he and I, we always seem to be at the same conventions. He could probably come up here and tell you my story better than I could. But Lester's just going to wait. He's not going to come up here and retell my story. I think it's important that we work together. I really want to understand what you as alcoholics have been through, so I maybe can feel a little bit more compassion for you. If you've been on drugs, I want to know what you've been through so I can understand, because maybe I'll be more willing to work with you. I'll be less willing to just detach completely and be more willing to detach with love and say, I understand you've got to go through a rough time, and I understand what you're going through. Because you have the same feelings I have, but you've dealt with them in a whole different way than I have. I really like it when Al Anon go to AA meetings. I don't get to a lot of speaker meetings or a lot of open AA meetings, but I really like them when I do. You guys have better stories than I do. That's one thing. You've been through a lot more. But there's a lot of wisdom. And I'm really young, and I really need that wisdom because I'm coming up in a time where I'm with people who drink, and it's really uncomfortable for me, and I have to know how to handle it. See, I'm at college right now on campus, but don't let that fool you. It's really the wettest dry campus that's ever been. People get trashed there a lot. And I can't be around it. It really bothers me to be in a social situation where people are drinking. And it's all over the world. People sit in restaurants and drink wine, and they don't go home and tear up the house or scream or yell or beat anybody up or fall down in a drunken stupor every time they do it. But see, I haven't learned that personally. And I find it the hardest thing to sit in a room with people who are drinking and think to myself, they're not going to become alcoholics. It's okay, Michelle. You don't have to get stressed about this. I can't handle it. And I have to learn how to deal with these things because it's reality. See, social drinking was not a reality in my house. You couldn't go out and have a drink socially and expect to come home and not go through some kind of hell. It just didn't happen. It's hard for me to imagine people who can go out and drink socially. It's hard for me. This is a really comfortable place for me, these meetings. But y'all have to give me the tools, and I have to use them to go out and deal with the people who don't know to let go and let God, who don't know to accept things. and that's really hard. I have been through more stuff in sobriety than I ever went through when my dad was drinking or when my brother was drinking, because it's when I've grown up. Some things have been good. I got my first kiss. That was fun. I understand why people do that kind of thing now. It's really kind of neat. It was also my last kiss, so hey. I've watched some people leave the program who I really love because they thought they could go out and take a drink. And I've seen some people in the program forget what they've learned and get really sick and almost die because they let someone else's drinking or someone else's sickness affect them. Today I can look in the mirror and I can say, you're not such a bad human being. I couldn't say that a long time ago. And it wasn't real long ago that I could look in the mirror and say that. I used to look in the mirror and think, God, why did you put me here? Because you know I am so ugly. I'm the most horrendous thing on this earth. The only thing I have is school, and what's going to happen when I don't go there anymore? I don't have anything. I'm not pretty. I can't talk to people. I'm a social incompetent. Today, I can fix my hair sometimes. I can even just get up in the morning and think, you're really not so bad, and today you're really going to be okay. I am going through a really stressful time in my life right now. I have to leave this meeting and go home and pack up and go back to school because I have a research paper for a professor who I know cannot possibly, well, she's human, but she's really nice. I just have a hard time understanding why she would put us through this. Maybe it's because she had to go through it and she wants to make us do the same thing. But I have to go back and I have to deal with this. And I still get stressed, y'all. I still get upset. And I still need someone to sit me down sometimes and say, well, this is how it's going to be. And you can do this and you can get it done and you don't have to get upset. And my dad's real good at doing that. We had a time scheduling last night where we sat down and worked everything out. But I still need that. Just because I've been in for a while doesn't mean I still don't feel bad and I still don't get hurt and I still don't cry. Because I cry a lot. And sometimes I cry more than I need to, but sometimes it's just the thing I need. And I can laugh now, whereas before I would just either keep it inside or go crazy. I work in a really stressful job. I work for the newspaper school, and we work with a computer. And computers aren't human, and they don't care if you yell at them or are frustrated with them. And one of my superiors said, Michelle, that's what she said to me at the beginning of the year, you can either get really upset and scream, or you can laugh. And I have learned to laugh. And some of the scariest and some of the most frustrating things in the world are the funniest things. The disease of alcoholism in sobriety is funny. It just is. When we went through them, they weren't funny. The things that the alcoholics did weren't funny, and the things that we did trying to make them stop weren't funny. But now they are, because it's so insane. And to think that we would do those things and that we still do them, and we look at ourselves and we laugh and say, I know not to do that. And I do it all the time. And I mess up and I just get right back up and I do it again. I try things in this program now that I would never have tried before. I've gotten a lot of courage back. I'm learning how to ride a horse to school. I've never been on a horse before. And sometimes I want to trade him in for a Buick. But he's really a lot of fun, and it's really scary sometimes. And getting involved with new people, even in the program, making friends with them is a really scary thing sometimes. But it's given me courage, and it's given me self-esteem. And it's okay to feel bad about myself sometimes, as long as I realize that I'm a child of God and I still have worth, and that I'm always going to have worth. It's okay for me to tell my parents now, something that you're doing I'm really uncomfortable with. They can yell and scream at me and say, forget it. Or they can just look at me and say, okay, that's how you feel, but I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. And, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just me. But I can tell them that now, and they don't. We've learned how to be a family now. We used to just be three or four people living in the same house. Now we can actually get along some of the time and stand to be with each other. It's really great. I don't feel always have to protect my mom anymore from my dad or from anybody else. Sometimes I still get that feeling, and that's when I have to be reminded where I came from and what it did to me. But I don't have to save her anymore. She's learned to stand on her own 2 feet. And people don't have to save me anymore. I've learned to stand on my 2 feet. My parents used to do everything for me, and adults used to do everything for me, and I have learned to fall down and get up gracefully and go on with what I'm doing. I'm still scared sometimes. I still don't want to do things sometimes. I still scream sometimes, but I'm also really human, and that's okay. Today I can tell my parents I love them. I really do love you, Mom and Dad. For a long time, it was hard for me to tell you that, because I felt like you two did a lot of things that I didn't deserve. But see, you were doing the best that you knew how to do at the time, and that's still the case sometimes. And sometimes I'm just doing the best I can to get by. But we love each other, and that's what counts, even when we're screaming at each other. You see, since I've been away at school and I've come home, I've begun to look at my parents a little bit differently. When I was little, my dad, when he was drinking, wouldn't cut his hair, and I used to play with it in the car when we would go on trips and put it in little ponytails and be cute. My dad's lost a lot of hair. My mom's hair used to be jet black, and I come home now, and it's getting gray. And this is really hard for me to grow up, because I haven't wanted to grow up. I never got to have that childhood I wanted. Now I watch Sesame Street a lot, because it was always my favorite show. I go out and I play games. And I look at my parents and I think, I've got to love them while they're here today. Even if they make me miserable sometimes, I've got to love them while they're here today. Because I may not be here tomorrow. I really may not. And I've got to love me today because I'm all I've got. I am all I've got. And God has made me stronger. And I have to thank Him for that every day. I used to be a shell of a human being. I used to be a specter walking around the earth. I have life and I have love. I have a program where people listen to me and they love me. I have a program where people sit me down and tell me to do some things I don't always want to do. But it's made me a better person. It's given me the ability to go on. I can apologize to you now and don't have to expect anything in return. I'm really grateful for you. If no one has gotten anything out of this, I have. Because I've been able to admit to you for one of the first times that I still have a lot of resentment I've got to get out. And I think a lot of us have a lot of resentment we haven't dealt with yet. But I know I've got a lot of growing up to do. And I know with the help of the program, one day, may not be the time I hit 21, I am going to be somewhat of an adult. I really want to thank the people of Allison for putting up with me, the people of Al-Anon, and all the wonderful people in AA I've known for the past 11 years. You are wonderful. You are good. Don't let anyone tell you any different. I love you and thank you.